Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All righty, hello everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing founder, you know, a founder that has done it multiple times, a founder that has built, scaled, raised, exited, a founder also that has been brought in, you know, as an external CEO to make things happen. And again, we're going to be learning all the ins and outs, you know, from the insides, you know, of going through an acquisition process into really thinking about how to validate an idea or how to go about, you know, building an MVP, deciding on whether it makes sense to raise a B round or to go through an acquisition. And then also entrepreneurship in general, you know, because a lot of people think that it's about sprinting, but it's more about the long-term game. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Shahar Alster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So originally born in Israel, Startup Nation. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up over there?
Hey, you know, Israel, it's very, very interesting country, as you can probably hear lately. But, you know, it was good, you know, born in Israel, you know, long time ago, unfortunately, moved to the U.S., you know, like after I served 3 years in the military, worked 15 years in a technology in local industry in Israel, running a technical company in Israel. And then I've been fortunate to move to the Silicon Valley for like, you know, 11 years, ran two companies, one company acquired by Deutsche Telekom and another company called SpaceIQ, also acquired by WeWork. And after, you know, 11 years in the U.S., you know, one wife, at least for now, two kids, I decided to go back to Israel. I worked as 1 year as a general manager in a company called Yotpo. And then recently, like a year ago, I joined a company, OurCart. I was brought to run this interesting company. OurCart is a company that kind of specializes of understanding consumer behavior in retail, in other research companies. So that is kind of in a nutshell my journey.
Well, that's quite the executive summary. And a 30,000 yes. foot view level. And obviously, as you were mentioning, kids, you know, they're like the best startups, but unfortunately, there is no exit and you only get to break even when they let you sleep at night. So, yes. Now let's do a deeper dive here. So the military. So you were in the military for about 3 years, and that's a mandatory thing in Israel. I guess, what do you think you learned when it comes to discipline? You know, because I think that that's a really amazing, you know, period of time to really learn, to grow, to mature. What do you think, you know, you got from the military?
It's a great question because, as you said, it's right. In Israel, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, you have to go to the military and serve for 3 years and serve the country. And I think it's kind of a nice thing because it's your opportunity to give back to the country. And but what you can take from that, especially if you are in, you know, kind of in combat or infantry units, you can really understand that you have no limits. You really, as a person, you have no limits. And we, as people, are much, much stronger than we think. You know, our limits are much beyond than our mind and our capabilities, and we can do much more. And you can actually take that and implement that, not just for the military. You can implement that in life, in your crisis, because there are always crises. And for me, it was a great thing to do also to implement in terms of business. How you can coach people, how you can find good people, and how you deal with crisis. So I think that's the main thing that, you know, serving 3 years in Israel, that's the gift that you actually get in from the military.
So for you, you're ultimately the what you ended up studying, you know, was more regarding economics, you know, and also marketing. What do you think, you know, like got you into the tech industry?
So I think just the curiosity, you know, when I started in 2000, in 99, you know, all the tech industry was kind of new. It was new to the world. You know, the big challenge back then was to connect everyone to the internet. You know, today, you know, the internet or the connection and the network, it's something given. We don't even think about it. Back then, the challenge, how we connect more people, how we can make sure that every place in the world, every person, it's become connected to this thing that called internet. And for me, you know, after I studied, you know, my BA and my MBA in marketing, I was kind of really curious about how we can just, you know, share this knowledge and how we connect more people to the internet, which back then was, again, a big thing. Today, it's a given. You know, I can see my kids. Yeah, of course, internet, Wi-Fi everywhere. But, you know, 20 years ago, it wasn't like that.
So you were actually for 15 years, you know, in the tech industry, more on a local level when you ended up running, you know, one of the companies, you know, there. But eventually you decided to pack the bags and move to Silicon Valley. What do you think triggered that move? And I'm sure that was quite a culture shock for you, too.
It was a culture shock. But at the end of the day, Israel, you know, it's a great startup nation. But, you know, we have our limits. It's a small country. You know, it's like we are like 10 million people. It is a small country. We are very good in innovation. We are very good in technology, but we have our limits. It's a small country. It's a small market. And if you really would like to work in big companies or to do something really big and, you know, kind of work with the big boys, if you know what I'm saying. So you need to work for a few years outside of Israel. And the best thing to do it is the, you know, it's the US, the Silicon Valley. It is the best place in the world for innovation and for people, you know, entrepreneurs that they would like to kind of extend their skills and build companies. It is the best place. So I was very lucky to have this opportunity to join to a friend of mine that decided to open a company. And hey, Shari, you should join me. And I packed my family. I have a wife and one kid back then. And it was really culture shock for me. The first year, it wasn't easy, but it definitely was worth it. I, you know, my personal, again, it's completely subjective. My personal recommendation to every person is to live outside of your country, of your comfort zone for at least 3 or 4 years.
I have to give it to you because, I mean, when I got into startups, I was, 23 or so. And I was single, no wife, no kids. I mean, now that I have a wife and kids, I mean, it would be quite the transition. You know, I got to tell you, venturing into the unknown. So how was that for you? Because, I mean, I'm sure that was not easy.
It wasn't easy at all. I was married with a pregnant wife with a 3-year-old son. But we moved to a very nice place in the Silicon Valley in Sunnyvale, which had and still, you know, have a very big Israeli supportive community. So this is important. You know, if you work in a place that, you know, there is a good community over there, it's still hard, but it's become every day that passing by, it's become, you know, easier. And after 1 year, you understand kind of the mentality, you understand the people, and you can actually be more focused on work because you have kind of more quiet at home, if you understand what I'm saying. So again, it was a cultural shock. And we said, you know, we are moving for 3 years, but we stayed there for almost 11 years.
The first rodeo, you know, ended up being quite, you know, the good outcome, you know, because the company ended up being acquired by Deutsche Telekom. I guess from that experience, what kind of visibility did you get into the full cycle of a company, you know, from start all the way to reaching the finish line?
Yeah, it's good because, you know, it was a really good process because we started like, we're what, 4 or 5 people? You know, I wasn't the CEO at the beginning, you know, after only like 2 years, you know, I started from kind of a VP of technology and then I moved on to actually to manage other part in the company. So we started like 5 people. 2 years later, we were 55 people, more customers. And in that time, the CEO left and said, Shachar, you should run the company. And then 1 year after that, the company was acquired by Deutsche Telekom. We stayed another year at Deutsche Telekom, under Deutsche Telekom. So it was the full cycle, the full journey, you know, from presentation almost to a small team, to a founding team, to a full scale, to M&A, to 1 year with a mother company. So that gave me kind of the whole spectrum, how you start from almost from nothing and you finish with M&A transaction.
Well, I mean, four years, especially if you count to the the time that you guys had to spend at Deutsche Telekom doing the vesting and resting. I'm not sure how much but I'm sure that gave you, you know, some of an idea on what would be the next chapter, because the next chapter is definitely one that you took on, you know, starting as the co-founder and CEO, you know, right off the bat. And that was with the Space IQ. So why Space IQ? At what point, you know, that's the idea of Space IQ come knocking? How did you go about validating it and to make sure that, you know, it made sense for it? And yeah, tell us about how you brought it to life.
So let me start by, you know, at the end of the days, after we finished, and I say our kind of two or three key people at Deutsche Telekom, after we finished our, you know, time at Deutsche Telekom, we said, you know, okay, let's do something else together. We were a great team back then, you know, and I said, we really like working together. Let's do something else. Let's open a company, a new company. So we spent like a few months of validate just ideas, you know, how we can do that, how we can, and where are the area in the B2B world, because all of us coming from the B2B section, how we can help companies, small, big enterprise companies, to do what they're doing better, from network management to security to any problem. And then completely by accident, we, you know, one of the people said, hey, we have this idea about workplace management, and all of us, what the hell is a workplace management? What is that? You know, we knew nothing about that. And we started to dig in a little bit. And what we found back then, it's a huge market that no one ever heard about this market. Workplace management, real estate management, facility management, who cares about that? It's kind of, you know, we have some person, you know, sitting in the back, moving some chairs. What is that? So we, you know, as more as we dig in to that idea, we found that, you know, there's a lot of problems. And we found an industry that hasn't been digitized, a huge industry that's running still with paper and pencil and maybe spreadsheets. And we found some companies that try to do something around that, and all of them kind of old school companies. And then we said, wow, there is something big here. But before in actually building our deck and presentation, and that's let's speak with potential customers. And we spoke. We interviewed more than 40 facility managers and real estate managers from any companies, from companies from Silicon Valley and companies outside of the Silicon Valley. And this is the validation answer to your question. And we asked them, how do you do it today? How do you do all those activities today? What are your problems? And then we came back to them two months later with a mock-ups. And they said, here's our solution. Here is how we can solve it. And are you willing to pay for a product like that? And all of them said, yes, please give us this product. And I said, great, we have something. We have the full validation. We have the market size. The TAM is big enough. We have, you know, competition, which is an old school competition. And we have potential customers that are willing to pay for this type of product. And this product can be even involved and become even more and more and more kind of reach to our customers. And I will stop here. I can continue the journey, but I will stop here and let you ask more questions.
So in this case, you know, how did you guys go about validating to the MVP? I mean, at what point were you guys like, okay, I think we're into something here?
Here is our approach on the MVP. And I remember I had a big argument with one of our investors. And he said, you know, your MVP should look like that and should look like this. And I said, look, it's not my quote. Someone else said that. But if you are not embarrassed in your MVP, the way it looks, you probably wasted too much energy and time and money on your MVP. Your MVP doesn't need to look that great, but needs to solve one problem in a very, very good way. So during this interview process, when we interviewed all these 40 facility managers and real estate and our potential customers, we asked them, okay, give me, what is your 5-6 problems, the main problems, the one that really hurt you? And then please put them in some kind of order. And we took kind of, you know, the first one, and I said, okay, the first one, which was the move management, by the way, we decided that's going to be our MVP. It's going to be ugly like hell, but it's going to be, you know, something that's going to solve the problem. And once it's actually solved the problem, and once we see people using that, we can take it, we can design it, we can add the layers of the UX and the UI, mainly the UI because the UX come in at the beginning, and we make it polished and make it clean and make it nice. This is exactly how we validate. We, lucky us, we had customers even before we had a company. And again, customers even before we had a company because of this validation process. This is so important, this validation process.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
For the company, I mean, obviously the company ended up getting acquired by WeWork. But prior to the acquisition, you were talking about there having investors. How much capital did you guys raise until the acquisition happened?
By the way, the beginning was really hard for us to raise money. You know, I had to, you know, the seed round, which was like, you know, $2 million, the seed round, you know, back then it was a lot of money. But still, it was really hard because when we pitch to many VCs, they say, hey, we have this big problem. The market is big. Okay, what is the problem? It's the workplace management. And all of them, what? What is the workplace management? And who cares about that? This is cost of doing business. So why do we should we invest in something that no one cares? We said, no, we are bringing, you know, we're taking a market that hasn't been digitized and that's the opportunity. And we're doing that and we're doing this. So I think like after 25, maybe even 30, you know, meetings, we, you know, Vertex Ventures decided to, they believe in us and said, you know, we like it. We like the team. You already have the team from the previous company. We like your energy. We think there is something there. So they gave us like $2 million to run the company. And we ran really fast. And one of the reasons for us to run very fast, because there was no need to build the culture. There was no need to build the team building. I took the previous team from the previous company. So it's the same people. That's why it's so important to invest in people. We just took the old team, say, hey, no more Deutsche Telekom. Now it's SpaceIQ. And we focus on that. So we ran pretty fast. 2.5 years after we started the company, 2.5 years, the list of the customers that we serve, it was unbelievable. From all the big guys, we stole all the big guys, all the big companies from the competition, from our competitors, you know, from Tesla to Nasdaq to Facebook, from to Splunk to Slunk to just name it. Everyone from the big company that you actually know work with us. And the reason I'm happy to talk about it, but kind of in a high level, the main reason because we came to the industry with fresh eyes. You know, we were the only technology company in the industry that the founding team of this company, we are all technology people. And we came to an industry that hasn't been digitized. And we asked the tough question, why are you doing like that? And we came to our customers, tell me what is your problem. I will give you the solution. Don't tell me what you need. Tell me what is your problem. And that's the big difference. And we built completely different products. And our approach was very different from our competition. And that, because of that, we've been, you know, able to actually steal all of these big customers from our competition.
So you did the seed and then you did the Series A. How big was the Series A?
A was 9.5, sorry. Almost 10.
So let's say you were at about close to 12 million. And then when it comes down to, when it comes to time to do the Series B, a different turn of events happened. And you're approached by WeWork. What happened next?
So just to be precise that. So we were about to close the B round, almost like $20 million. And we were short of $2 million. We had a goal. We said $20 million. We were short in two. So I sent an email to the CTO of WeWork. I just met him like, you know, a year ago, and say, hey, Shiva, how are you? Remember me, Shachar? We met a year ago. We are short of $2 million for the B round. It's about to close. And do you want to invest and be a strategic partner with us? You know, 5 minutes later, he sent me an email. Hey, Shachar, great to hear from you. Are you willing to hear something bigger than investment? Okay, you know, always happy to hear. What do you mean? Of course, I knew what he meant, but I said, what do you mean? And he said, and he said it in a very nice way. He was a super nice guy, super smart guy. And he said, you know, we would like to participate in your kind of due diligence process, like an investor. So you're very small and we are already at the end. You can talk with the lead of the B round. And he said, you know, let me run the due diligence process. And then there are a few options. If we like you, you know, we're going to invest. If we don't like you, we can still be friends. If we're going to like you very much, we're just going to buy you. Are you open to that? And I said, yeah, I'm open. So we put it on hold and we sent them all the material. We met with them for 2 weeks. And then I met him in San Francisco, the headquarters in San Francisco. They have two, one in New York, one in San Francisco. I met him and he said, yeah, Shachar, what you're doing is amazing. And I definitely would like to buy the company and offer some price. And we'd start talking about numbers. And I said, you know, Shiva, let's put the numbers on the side. Forget about the number. Tell me, why do you want my company? I never thought I'm going to sell my company so soon. And I said, why do you want SpaceIQ? You're big WeWork. Remember, that was in 2019. You know, WeWork back then was the biggest company and, you know, the big promise. Why you big WeWork would like to buy SpaceIQ? And they say, your product, what you guys develop, it's amazing and it's actually fits to our future needs. Your capability to connect to every data source in every company, to take all this data, to run your technology and your kind of secret sauce, and to spit out a lot of insight that can really help a big organization. It's amazing. We would like to do that. So, okay, great. Now let me tell you what we are doing and what is our vision. I went to the whiteboard and I did all of that kind of, you know, draw on the whiteboard. We are doing this, we are doing that. He said, wow, that is amazing. Have you met Adam Newman? And I said, no, I never met Adam Newman. You should fly tomorrow. Forget about the numbers. You should talk with him about the numbers. You should fly tomorrow morning to New York. Tell Adam Newman what you guys are doing and just go and meet him. Okay, fine. On the following day, I flew to New York and met Adam Newman. He's really, really interesting and charismatic character. I met him for like 2 hours. And then I met him later on the same night in his house in New York. And we shook hands and we closed the deal.
Wow. Were the terms of the transaction disclosed or anything made public or not?
So it's not went public. It was a really nice deal. Let me put it this way. You know, it was a very nice also exit for our investors, around 4x, which is pretty nice after 3.5 years.
Yeah.
4x, 3.5 years. I know everyone is looking for the 10x, but, you know, 3.5 years after, 4x after 3.5 years, it's pretty good. So, of course, you know, they send the LOI, and of course, it's always this argument between the board and some of the board, you know, people say, yeah, Shachar, you should definitely go and sell it. It's a nice outcome. And for us, it's like 4X. And some of the other board member, which is other investor, they say, no, it's an amazing company. Why you sell the company? You should take it, you know, take it to now and then sell it in a few more years. Always this conversation. But at the end of the day, we decided to sell it. And the main reason, by the way, why, regardless of the personal outcome, which was very nice, it was we were kept completely independent. So after WeWork acquired SpaceIQ, you know, for the next year, we were completely independent. So my budget was, you know, double than what even I thought I'm going to raise in this B round. So we hire more people, more engineers, more marketing, more sales. So for us, it just was amazing. We did exactly the same thing. We just with more budget. So we really helped us to kind of to achieve more, and we brought more and more customers. So, but just to finish that story, but unfortunately, as everyone knows, probably, you know, WeWork, you know, the IPO didn't work, you know, and they released Adam Neumann, the CEO, and then they decided to sell the entire list of companies that they acquired. WeWork acquired many companies over the last few years, and they say, okay, we should sell everything. We should just focus on real estate, no more technology. And they approach me and say, okay, Shachar, you need to sell SpaceIQ again as part of WeWork. I was kind of back then VP and GM at WeWork. So I sold my company again a year later to my competitor as part of WeWork. So I sold it to, really. So they took the company, of course, they took the team. Of course, they released me. And I said to my wife, you know, this is probably a good sign to go back to Israel after 11 years in Silicon Valley.
In your case, as you were saying, I mean, you went back to Israel. You took that opportunity to go back to Israel after 11 years. And then one thing that you decided to do is you've taken a different direction in your career, no? I mean, starting with Yotpo. I mean, you joined Yotpo. And by the way, you know, we've had the founder of Yotpo too on the podcast. So for anyone interested in that journey, feel free to take a look at it. But there you joined them for about a year before, you know, things, you know, took a different path and took you to our cart. So walk us through what happened there. What were the sequence of events?
You know, it's a great question. And many people ask me, Shachar, why you, being 3-time CEO, join Yotpo? No, now, Yotpo, it's an amazing company. You know, it's a really amazing company. They are doing very well. But, you know, for me, it's all about the team. You keep hearing me saying that a few times. And for me, going back to Israel after 11 years, you know, my network was mainly in the U.S. And my network of people, of good people in Israel, were only in the executive position. And for me to open a startup in this environment in Israel and to bring in and start building this kind of team of good engineers and all of that, I didn't have my network back then. Again, all my network were executive people from, you know, a long time ago. And also I've been approached from with one of the board members of Yotpo, Adam Fisher. And he said, you know, Shachar, there is an amazing opportunity in this big company. You just came back to Israel. You know, maybe it's too much pressure for being a CEO and a co-founder and moving back to Israel after 11 years. There is a very nice opportunity. Come, be general manager, build something completely new, but under the umbrella and without the pressure of board and all of that. And so, you know, that's interesting. Let's do that. So that was kind of the rationale for me to join a big company, even to be, you know, one of the management people over there. And as an executive person over there, I was able to focus just on the execution without, you know, fundraising, without the board interaction and all of that. Without some of the pressure, of course, there was a pressure. And then a year later, unfortunately, this company, although they did very well, they decided to close the project. They decided to release like 10% of the people in Tel Aviv and in the U.S. And because of the e-commerce status globally, they decided, okay, Shachar, your project is amazing, but we can afford it now. So unfortunately, we have to say goodbye. And then I've been approached by some headhunting that say, Shachar, I know that you were a founder a few times and a CEO, but there is a company here called OurCart, a really good company. They are looking for a CEO. And I said, okay, I've never been a CEO that brought externally. You know, for me, I'm starting from scratch. I love that, you know, from presentation to execution, raising money and M&A, hopefully. And I said, okay. So I spent some time at our card, like 6 weeks of, you know, validate and run my due diligence process to see what is the market and what is the opportunity in our card. And last week, I just, you know, was 1 year celebration of me in our card.
That's amazing. And I guess for the people that are listening, what does our card do? What's the business model? How do you guys make money?
So our card is a company, again, we are specialized in kind of, you know, understanding of consumer behavior and how we do that. So we have kind of a technology that we developed a few years ago and continue to develop that technology, mainly today with AI and the other good tools that we have out there. What we do, we are scanning receipts, like physical receipts, from people that, you know, buying in a grocery shop, at retails. We, you know, we have this program that you, as a person, you can upload your receipts. We have the capabilities, the technology, and to scan that receipt. And by only scanning, you know, I'm talking about millions of receipts, we can scan all the receipts and understand, you know, the consumer behavior, really kind of the consumer behavior in markets in the US, in Europe, in Asia. And that consumer behavior analysis and data and, you know, insights, it's really, really interesting and valuable to our customer, which is retail, it's a market research, it's a big brands. It's really people that, you know, care about to understand what their shoppers are doing, why they are buying their merchandise, why they are not buying their merchandise, why they are buying in that grocery or why they are buying another grocery. So there's a lot of insight and a lot of behavior that you can understand by just reading the physical receipt.
That's amazing. Now, obviously, you know, in this case, a little bit different, you know, the experience of coming in as an external. So what were some of the things that you did, you know, in order to like put this thing in the right path?
Great. So, you know, first, when you come to an organization that have been running for a few years, you need to understand kind of the major assets, you know, what areas of the companies are running well, and what areas of the company they need a little bit of different structure and need help, and how you can adjust them to the opportunities that you have in the markets. So as example, you know, I replaced, like, you know, three people, the CTO, the head of product, great people, really, really great people. But, you know, they were really good of kind of the market that was relevant for us, like, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And today, the opportunities are a bit different. So you need people that, you know, different level of skill sets. As example, you know, the new CTO is someone that specializes in AI and Gen AI, can understand, you know, what are the opportunities that we have out there and how we can implement that to the current technology that we have. Same thing with product, how you can use the CPG industry that wasn't available for us at the company 2 years ago, and now it's available. So you change some of the key people, although unfortunately we had to say goodbye to really good people that was responsible for running some of the things in the company. You replace some of the, and then you make some adjustment to the roadmap of the company. So mainly understanding the market, replace some of the people, and now kind of focus on how to even become a better technology provider, how you can help your consumer, your customer, because they have consumer, we have customer, how you can help them what to gain more value in what we are doing. And once you get that, and once you're a big customer and their consumer, you know, getting more value from your product, you become really enabler for them. They can't do your job without you. And that's a really, really key, kind of phase in your journey, how you become a must-have solution, how you become an enabler. And that's, by the way, to your previous question, jumping a little bit, you ask, you know, about the MVP, you know, the journey, right? MVP, and then you become an enabler, and then you become a must-have.
So imagine, Shahar, that you were to go to sleep tonight, and you wake up in a world where the vision of our card is fully realized. What does that world look like?
I think this world is look like in that every brand, every major brand, even a mid-sized brand And everyone that, you know, deals with CPG, you know, markets can't do their job if they don't use our cards. So it's exactly the same terminology. Like, you know, if you are a financial person, you use spreadsheet. And if you are an engineer, you have Jira. And if you have, you know, you can choose any example that you want. At the end of the day, if you want to be a successful, you know, marketing manager in any big brand or any major brand, to be successful, you need to have our card. You need to have our card to understand fully your customer journey. You need to understand your customer behavior. And even more than that, you can even understand other markets and other opportunities in kind of real time without spending millions of dollars.
So Shahar, let's say I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time. You know, I bring you back in time to 2011, you know, and you're right there in Tel Aviv at the airport, you know, that airport where you are packing your bags, you know, you're checking your bags in and you're venturing into the unknown with your wife, pregnant wife, and your 2-3 year old child. And let's say you get on the airplane and you're able to sit down next to that younger self that is sitting there on the airplane going into you know, achieving the American dream into America. And let's say you're able to give that younger self, that younger Shahar right there on the spot, one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Can I give two advices?
There you go. Go for it.
The one, believe in yourself, no limits. You know, believe in yourself. If you ask me, Shahar, you know, are you going to, in a few years, to sit with Adam Newman and negotiate with him a tough, you know, negotiation about, you know, the size of the company and the deal structure and all of that? I would say, me, never. So always believe in yourself, and there are no limits to the things that you can do. Whatever you can do much more than that. Always remember that. Number two, patient. Patient, it is a marathon. It's not a sprint. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to be a CEO, if you want to be a co-founder, be patient. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy every day, because it's going to be very long. It's going to be very painful. Make sure the people that surrounded you, the people that you're going to share this experience, you are enjoy walking with them and be with them. That's important, because you know, maybe this journey at the end, it's not going to be worth it. And maybe whatever you have in your vision, in mind, it's not going to be there. So at least enjoy the journey. And the best way to enjoy the journey is with the people that, you know, sharing this journey with you. Those are my two pieces of advice.
So for the people that are listening now that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so, Shahar?
LinkedIn. You know, my LinkedIn is always available. I can see LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, hey, Shahar, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.